Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and Branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Flagship Podcast. I am Chip Brown of Horns247.com, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague at Horns247.com, the one and only Eric Henry. Eric, full disclosure, we are recording on March 19th. My son tells me this is Father's Day in Spain. So he wished me a happy Father's Day today, which I thought was interesting. He attends Colorado State University, but he is studying in Spain. We'll get to Colorado State and their basketball team here in a second. Of course, by the time people listen to the Flagship Podcast, anything having to do with Colorado State could be outdated, depending on the outcome of tonight's Colorado State-Virginia basketball game. But it is the first day of spring football, which is like a holiday in the state of Texas, especially for Longhorn Nation. You and I and Hank South and Jeff Howe and Jordan Scruggs, the whole Horns 24/7 staff family, was out at spring ball today for day one. We got to see all the usual suspects that we've come to know and love, the returning Longhorns from last year's 2023 Big 12 championship team and college football playoff semifinalist, as well as 17 early enrollees. I mean, newcomers all over the place. One of those newcomers was also coach to player helmet communication, Eric. Some players looked sleeker, faster, better conditioned than others. We'll get to that. But Quinn Ewers, baby. Quinn Ewers was slinging it. And he's got a receiver room of 10 receivers, one of which has caught 8 passes at Texas. The rest are virtual babies in this Texas offense. And then defensively, Eric, we're looking at newcomers on the defensive line, at defensive tackle specifically, not on the defensive end position. But Jalen Ford, the middle linebacker, is going to be running at Pro Day tomorrow, hopefully. He didn't run at the combine. And so Texas looking for a new middle linebacker. And, of course, the safety position with Jaron Thompson transferring to Auburn is looking for answers as well. And at corner, although I'll just say this, Eric, before I throw it to you. Malik Muhammad, he's as close as I come to just saying, okay, this dude's going to be a star. And I loved his energy today. He was leading. He was vocally leading. And I just think that he carries himself like a star. And so Malik Muhammad was definitely one of my guys who stood out today on the first day of spring football. How about you?
Chip Brown, what a day it was, as you talked about. You know, certainly kind of like an unofficial holiday here in the state of Texas. Certainly a eventful day for us, right? An exciting day for us. It's not that, you know, those don't enjoy covering basketball and everything else that comes on the 40 acres, but the first day you get a chance to see all these new guys, you know, there's something about that that just is it's special, right? In its own unique way, it is pretty special. So definitely excited. And again, also full disclosure, I've been fighting the tech gremlins for the past hour here. So folks, put this out there, you know, knock on wood, we don't have any more tech gremlins in the taping of this podcast. Now, as to what impressed me during the open of spring ball, listen, you said that, you know, some of the guys in terms of production are relative babies, but I'm gonna tell you right now, Chip, if my memory serves me correct, I want to say it was 2021 or maybe even 2019. I covered for the old gig. It was Middle Tennessee State at Georgia. And I covered that game in Athens. And the reason I mentioned that, Chip, is this is just in terms of being around a football team and seeing what just looked like a well-oiled machine in terms of the operations of the way things were happening in practice. And then you go to the size and the athleticism. And again, as you know, Steve Sarkisian said today, what do you call it? Like, you know, these guys are in underwear today.
Underwear Olympics.
Right. But let me tell you this much right now. You know, obviously football is not played in underwear. It's played in armor, as Sark said. But you get a chance to physically see these guys' development, right? And I'm not a big, you know, like this guy's body looks like this guy's body looks like that. I mean, you know, we've seen football players come in all shapes and sizes and be, you know, excellent athletes. However, Chip, this was an impressive looking group of athletes just from a sheer eye test. That was something that stood out to me. I saw Isaiah Bond physically. Does not look like a guy who is, I mean, we're not talking about 6'5", 6'6", you know, receivers here. We're talking about, you know, guys like Isaiah Bond with, this is, you know, 6'6", 6'1", some of the other guys, but just impressive in terms of built, Chip. I mean, there wasn't a player. DeAndre Moore is not a 6'4", 6'5", receiver. Built. So shout out to Torrey Becton and what he's built. Quinn Ewers, Chip. We were talking about that as we were getting our writing done, you know, on that time span from the time we leave the field, heading over Steve Sarkisian's presser. Broad, you know, I asked you, what did he play at his redshirt freshman year in Texas 2022. We looked it up. It was 207, and he's listed at 205 now. I'm sure you can attest. Safe to say that the 207 he was playing at in 2022 did not look like the 205 that he looked like out there on the football field, right? Even a guy like Christian Clark, Chip, that is a man. You know what I'm saying in terms of size. So that was my first takeaway. The second takeaway, and Steve Sarkisian led his press conference in terms of the football team, his remarks, was just the level of depth, you know, sheer numbers. It looked like every position. And again, I was only around for fall camp last year, but just when you go through and, you know, we're doing our thing, Chip, trying to take a look at positions, see who stands out and, you know, who's working where and things of that nature. It looked like every position just string after string after string. And Sark said it, that this was the most, in terms of sheer numbers, in this now his fourth spring camp that he has had at Texas, the ability to go ones, twos, threes at every single position. That, in my mind, Chip, was just very impressive. So it's day one, and you talked about, you know, and you did a great job writing about this for the site. You know, just Steve Sarkisian talked about the new helmet communication and being able to communicate with Quinn Ewers and various ways, the ways that'll be different than it was before, and also on the defensive side as well. But you know, the thing that stood out to me in terms of what I wrote about, I guess would be a final takeaway, is just Sark harped on versatility last year, you know, from game one to Rice all the way through the final win of the year against Oklahoma State. He talked about versatility, and I think versatility is going to be really interesting to watch with the sheer numbers of this team. And then of course the offensive versatility and the way he's going to use guys like chess pieces. I think it's going to get really interesting, and I'll be really curious to see what this thing looks like 15, or I guess now 14 practices from now when we get to the spring game, and then see what this thing looks like heading into fall.
Yeah. Yeah. April 20th is the orange white spring game. And, you know, I think just eyeball test, you know, continuing to hit on things that jumped out at us here. These will be our first impressions of what we see of the 2024 Longhorns. Of course, there are a few players who will arrive in June, including Oregon State wide receiver transfer Silas Bolden. But, you know, defensively, and I spent a lot of my time with the defense Tuesday in the first day of spring football. And, you know, I mentioned Malik Muhammad, Andrew Makuba, really quick feet, really able to turn his hips and run, impressive. You know, at linebacker, I think Mo Blackwell looks like a linebacker. You know, he used to look like a safety playing linebacker. He was, you know, right around 200 pounds, 200. I think they listed him at 209 last year. Now he's up to 219. He might even be a little bigger than that since they took the weights. Anthony Hill just looks like a beast. David Benda, we know, Quadzilla. The linebacker position is, you know, Leonga Lafau. You know, he was running second team middle linebacker. I mean, second team on the first day of spring, but let's see how it all looks April 20th. But lots of intrigue there. And then on the defensive line, everyone looking for who's going to take over and step up. We know Alfred Collins, Vernon Broughton, and Tia Savea are guys who are expected to ascend with the departures of Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy. I thought Tia Savea looked good. I thought he moved well. I'll tell you, Jare Bledsoe looks good to me and looked explosive, looks like he's ready. Looks like he's ready to put in his application. And, you know, if there's a disappointment from day one, we kind of knew when we saw the weights and the, you know, when the 2024 roster hit the, when Texas published it, that Sadir Mitchell, you know, they list him at 372. He looks 372. It wasn't, you know, it's not good. He was walking the diameter of the practice field and sitting out of some drills. Steve Sarkisian saying that, you know, wants to see that weight come down a little bit for Kendrick Blackshire too, the Alabama transfer, who, by the way, looks really chiseled for 261. I mean, that dude has, as my man Sean Adams used to say, calves, hams, and ass. That dude is put together. I can't wait to see whatever weight he's going to play at. I can't wait to see him on the field hitting somebody. And then Savion Red, who you noticed was nursing a little bit of a hand injury. Steve Sarkisian said he'd like to see him come down from the 280 pounds that he weighed in at here for spring football. So, you know, but for the most part, you know, defensively, the guys look good. And I'll say this, on offense, the one player who stood out to me the most, and I didn't spend a ton of time over there, was Aaron Butler, who looks like he's ice skating down the field. I mean, he is so smooth and so fast and caught everything that they threw him. That wide receiver room is so loaded, Eric. I mean, Aaron Butler was the last guy to commit to Texas and sign. And that dude looks like he's ready to go. So good luck to Chris Jackson and Steve Sarkisian trying to figure out how that wide receiver rotation is going to look this year. But, you know, Jordan Washington, our man Hank South, you know, talked about how good he looks. We haven't really talked about Jordan Washington very much, the early enrollee freshman tight end who came in, I think, at 240 and looks like you know, looks good. Looks like he's been in the weight program a little bit. So, you know, I mean, this is a program now that is trying to contend for back-to-back conference championships. I mean, I can't remember the last time we've talked about Texas that way. I mean, we've talked about, oh, their window is this year, and then it'll probably be 2 years after that when this guy grows up or that guy grows up. Steve Sarkisian talked about it. With the transfer portal, you can replace your divots, and it looks like Texas has done that.
Chip, it's interesting you mention Aaron Butler standing out, right? I mean, we don't have to go too long on this because obviously we got plenty to get to with the NCAA tournament and just, you know, a bunch of things that we'll get into on in this podcast. But that room intrigues me, and I have to admit, I think this spring is going to get interesting, Chip, because you talk about Aaron Butler, even Parker Livingstone. I mean, he was listed. I think we had him at like what 6'5", 6'6", you know, 180 coming out of high school. Out of high school, he looks bigger than that and impressive. I mean, it was, you know, not a secret he was a good athlete, but I guess the first time I'm getting eyes on him, that dude impressed, right? And we have those two guys. I think it's going to get really interesting. Again, we don't want to speculate too much, but, you know, you got a group of guys last year, of course, in DeAndre Moore, Ryan Niblett, Jonte Cook. This spring could be huge for, I mean, I think Jonte's position more than anyone else is probably the most solidified considering where he was last year, right? But for Niblett and Moore, I think this spring could be huge because you got these guys are coming in and pushing, right? You know, I mean, it could get really, really interesting. But again, it's first world problems, right? Much rather have too many receivers than too few. I think you go back, I think, Chip, you talked about the last podcast, right? That 2022, Steve Sarkisian, 2021 or 2022, so Steve Sarkisian's first 2 years. I'm forgetting which year you referenced specifically, but you talked about that receiver room being, or at least the rotation being shrunk and mainly two guys, right?
Right. Xavier Worthy. 2022. It was just Worthy and Jordan Whittington.
There you go, right? So certainly not a problem that I think anyone is complaining about, but I think maybe in terms of, you know, the positional battles that we talked about in the offseason, I know I kind of harped on that defensive tackle spot, right? Maybe receiver's another one that we really got to keep an eye on during spring.
Yeah. Yeah. And the edge position. Let me just take you through the guys who were they were doing individual drills. This was the order of this drill. Baron Sorrell, Ethan Burke, Justice Finkley, Colin Simmons, Trey Moore, Tasili Akana, Colton Vasek, Billy Walton, Zena Umazulu, and Jamon Tapp. That's 10 guys. And let me tell you something. Zena Umazulu is long. That dude, like, we think Ethan Burke is long, Colton Vasek is long. Zena Umazulu may have the longest wingspan of the three of them. They are definitely getting a profile, a prototype of that length at the edge position in those three guys. And it's kind of amazing that Ethan Burke will be draft eligible after this year. But Baron Sorrell looks good, and he was leading. And, you know, he's just so thick. And, you know, I know people were like, man, where were the sacks last year? Don't ever forget what those two did, Baron Sorrell, Ethan Burke, in terms of helping Texas finish number three against the run. And so it was impressive. I mean, Trey Moore, Colin Simmons. I mean, these guys are pushing. Like I said, I don't know if there was much of a rhyme or reason to the order of that drill in terms of who's, you know, I mean, you could argue Baron Sorrell, Ethan Burke, Justice Finkley, the kind of the old heads on, you know, on that group, but Colin Simmons, that dude is long, he's explosive. Trey Moore, everything I've heard about Trey Moore is that he's got juice, quote, you know, juice. And he got some compliments today from, you know, the coaches who were working that drill. So it's depth.
Can I add one quick thing on Trey Moore? Because I think, you know, again, I'll try to just bring some context, having covered, you know, the previous league he was in. Trey Moore may not stand out from a physical perspective yet. I'll be curious what he looks like, you know, given an entire summer here on the 40 acres. If you know anything about UTSA, it was a struggle for them to get a, you know, true athletic facility built for a couple of years. And if my memory serves me correct, I think Trey Moore may have only spent 1 year with that facility being in place, what they call the Rise facility, Roadrunner or such and such, you know, whatever it's called, right? But I'm only mentioning that just to provide some context for that. This is not a kid who, I mean, I don't know his high school background, but in terms of college, this is not a kid who has spent the type of, you know, from a sheer weight perspective, what he'll get with Torrey Becton. So let's see what he looks like over, you know, once fall rolls around. But just to give some context as far as what you talked about, as far as at least he's got everything else going for him, right? And let's see what happens once he gets, you know, a summer under his belt of conditioning here at 40 acres.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's, I mean, they talk about his get off, his explosiveness off the line. And that's, if you have that, you have a chance. So it's going to be fun to watch how this competition, this iron sharpening iron, at receiver, at edge, at, you know, defensive tackle, linebacker. I mean, they've got depth. Sarkisian even threw out some sugar to Alex January, the early enrollee freshman defensive tackle who came in from Duncanville, and he looks good. I mean, he looks like he's been in the college weight program for a bit. So, you know, I think it's going to be also interesting at the corner position, because you had Malik Muhammad and Terrence Brooks as the guys sort of at the front of the drills, and then, you know, you've got Jahdae Barron, Jalen Gilbo. We got to wait and see how those reps get distributed here in the spring, because Jahdae Barron's going to play some outside corner, and maybe, you know, that's to push Terrence Brooks a little bit, who, you know, had struggled at times, especially late in the year. And then Wardell Mack, you know, Warren Roberson, those guys looked really fast today, and can they put it together technique wise? But I will go back to Makuba for a second, because he and Xavier Filsimi were the smoothest, in my opinion, today when they were flipping their hips and turning and running. And, you know, Jelani McDonald's a big guy, but he's a little not as fluid as Makuba and Xavier Filsimi. And Filsimi's been a guy who's gotten a lot of praise for coming in ready to work, in shape, who's had a really strong work ethic, all business approach to things. And I'm really, really interested to see just how comfortable he is, because we saw Derek Williams come in last year. He didn't get here till June, and he was getting meaningful reps in the two deep from the beginning of the season. So it feels like Filsimi is on that same track as a young player, as an early enrollee freshman. And man, if Makuba is locked in and ready to go, he looks like he can help, because he looks like a really good coverage safety. And we know Jaron Thompson, you know, had three interceptions last year. They've got to replace his production. And Makuba is a guy who has done it at Clemson. So, you know, again, I think Steve Sarkisian and this coaching staff has been very, very surgical, and they haven't missed much in the portal. And so let's see how these portal transfers end up contributing, because it looks like they're going to contribute a lot.
Yeah, and just to kind of round things out here, you know, you've talked a little about defense, talk a little bit about offense. I'll kind of round us out here with the special teams, you know, kind of getting a look. Of course, we know Xavier Worthy was a, you know, major contributor, a weapon in the punt return game. Getting a chance to see, you know, some of the guys who are back there. I think the three you got to keep an eye on, you know, in terms of Matthew Golden, Isaiah Bond, Jonte Cook. It was nice to see all of those guys get their reps back there on punt return. Saw some guys stand out. You know, even you talk about Jelani McDowell from a safety perspective. He kind of stood out to me a little bit in coverage, you know, because Steve Sarkisian was emphatic, you know, at least past year, talking about filling the as the best two gunners in the nation, Keaton Crawford, Keelan Robinson. Well, Keaton is now in Reno with Jeff Choate, and Keelan is in heading to the NFL, right? So, you know, got to fix the, got to replace those. Austin Jordan, Jelani McDonald. And just to see them get some work out there as far as gunners. So it's nice to see that. Chip, I think something that in my mind, maybe this is just a stickler for me as someone who, listen, I did not play college ball at this level. I played 1 year at Jacksonville University, which is certainly a much lower level than this. But, you know, I've always had an affinity for special teams because it was the only time I ever, you know, stepped foot on a football field at this level. But Chip, the depth, right? Coming back to that, seeing some of the guys in terms of whether it's, you know, Michael Taft or Akana, I'm trying to think who else I've seen out there, Trey Wisner, right? You know, really those impact guys who made a name for themselves on special teams. If you can kind of get that production, I think that's just embarrassment of riches, you know, see what happens there. Can't pay too much attention to the punter. I'm forgetting the kid right now as a walk-on who was doing the punting today. Obviously, you know, it's still not going to be, it's not going to be, you know, the punter come day one. So waiting to see where Michael Kern comes in. It was kid 49, Chip. I got my roster here. Ian Ratliff. Was doing the punting today. So be certainly interested to see, you know, what Steve Sarkisian's assessment of that is following spring, if there's room to hit the transfer portal or if that's Michael Kern's job to lose in that realm. But all in all, like I said, you know, just to kind of round us out here with the special teams, shout out a couple of those guys, were getting some work in there as well. Jeff Banks, certainly, you know, it doesn't take much to wake that guy up, right? You know, you could hear his voice loud and clear. Want all the guys to making sure everyone's fielding punts. Don't let anything get behind you. I believe it was Aaron Butler. Let me just check my numbers here really quick. Who got a
Ryan Wingo let one hit the ground.
Ryan Wingo. There we go. It was Ryan Wingo was the one who let one hit the ground, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah, Banks. Banks jumped him. Catch that ball. The coaches and, you know, people are going to ask about Johnny Nansen. I was down there with the defense. You can hear Johnny Nansen. I mean, he is a spirited, passionate coach, but looked like he was communicating very comfortably with his group. Kenny Baker was further away. I couldn't, you know, probably the furthest end of the practice field, for those who've been out to Denius Fields, the exact opposite end of the bubble. And they only let us go, you know, so far. We can't walk right up on the drills. We'll see how Kenny Baker evolves with his group. But Johnny Nansen and all the coaches were chirpy today. I think Johnny Nansen has been, you know, if you read the Stampede at Horns 24/7, our big recruiting content piece on Mondays, Johnny Nansen is killing it in recruiting. And we knew he was a good recruiter. Sark knew he was a good recruiter. But he's really hit the ground running, we should say. Eric, anything else from today? I mean, we could kind of touch on every position group, but, you know, I thought Amari Nyblack looked good. You know, he looked thin to me last year at Alabama. But he looks more like a tight end. We know he can fly.
Oh, listen, I had a chance to see him. He's a Clearwater kid, local kid to my area, right? So, you know, the thing about him, he's always been a great athlete. I even said this to, you know, Jeff Howe and I think the entire group as we're kind of getting ourselves together post-practice. But he looks, and I don't want to cause Texas fans to salivate a bit, but, you know, he looks more athletic. And again, I could be biased. I've seen him a while, but more athletic than JT Sanders, you know. And part of that maybe is, you know, JT played around, what, 246, 247, Nye Black's 233, 235, right? So maybe that's part of it. But it definitely going to be a weapon in terms of someone who can push the ball downfield. In terms of final things that stood out to me is, let's not let this guy get buried, you know, beneath everything else. Quinn Ewers looked sharp today. Looked, you know, just very much in command. I know those things sound super cliche, but I think it's something if you witness it, right? I mean, just someone who, Chip, you know, Quinn is a guy who, you know, is not the most verbose guy for the most part. I mean, I don't know if Quinn would consider himself shy around the media, but I think kind of somewhat soft-spoken and reserved. But I would love to know in an honest moment, just if now year three of just being the guy, right? Not having a fight for your job, not walking to quarterback competition, the level of confidence and how that emboldens him and empowers him. It's probably a better word than embolden, probably empowers him as a player and as a quarterback. Because I mean, it's funny, Chip, you know, I was just, you know, really diving into a bunch of podcasts, just trying to, you know, get myself juiced up here for spring. And it's easy to forget Quinn Ewers was a superstar recruit. You know, I mean, everyone talks about Arch Manning and, you know, they talk about him in terms of this, when he's going to be the guy. Well, I mean, let's not forget, you know, Quinn Ewers was, I don't want to say was Arch Manning before Arch Manning, but it's not a guy who can't, from a physical perspective, do all the things asked the quarterback position. So I just think that was a thing that I honestly want to get let, you know, kind of go under the radar. He just looked in control, sharp, ready to go.
Yeah. And you're right. I mean, they're both, you know, Vince Young had a perfect rating as the number one player in the country in 2002. Quinn Ewers had a perfect rating as the number one recruit in the country in, what, 2021? And Arch Manning had a perfect rating as the number one recruit in the country, according to the 24/7, you know, ranking. And that's rare. I mean, the fact that Texas has two top recruits in the country at the quarterback position. And that, I thought, you know, we've talked about this before, Eric, but Quinn is very comfortable in his own skin. I mean, to have another number one overall recruit in your same room, and Quinn doesn't, you know, he talks about Arch like, this is, you know, I can't wait to see him grow. Like, he's not threatened. He encourages and helps Arch as much as he can. And by all accounts, if this season goes the way that it's supposed to go for Quinn Ewers, who's a leading, if not the leading candidate to win the Heisman Trophy and be the number one quarterback selected in next year's draft, then he'll move on and Arch will ascend, you know, knock on wood, barring any unforeseen circumstances. So it's a loaded, talented offensive side of the football, especially in that quarterback room. And it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to watch how Quinn Ewers takes that next step, because I thought he took a huge step from his, you know, redshirt freshman year to his sophomore year, and now as the third year starter at Texas. You're right. Command is the right word. He's in command. He's in command. He's leading. And, you know, you think back to 2 years ago, he was trying to get to know his teammates. He was very deferential. Now it's his show, and he's operating like that, carrying himself like that. And it's going to be up to him to organize that receiver room. And he has been. I mean, they've been throwing three times a week during winter conditioning. But in practice and scrimmage situations, he's going to have to make sure those receivers are doing everything exactly the way they're supposed to do it. And he'll do it. You know, he's not going to leave that to Chris Jackson and Steve Sarkisian. He'll do it because he's invested. You know, he came back for a reason. He's in a contract year, and we've seen guys, we saw guys last year approach the season like a contract year. Tavondre Sweat, Byron Murphy worked out pretty well for them. So you're right. I mean, don't take Quinn Ewers for granted. He looks like he's ready to take the next step. All right. We've got some basketball to get into. I mean, Eric is going to read us his entire NCAA tournament bracket right now. Oh, maybe not.
Yeah, about that.
Yeah. Have you filled yours out yet?
I have not. I'll probably be doing that on the plane to Charlotte tomorrow morning.
Yeah, I haven't either, and I need to get on it. But here we go. Do we give top billing to the women because they're the number one seed?
I listen, I don't think that's a question, Chip. Let's dive into the women.
Yeah, I mean, good for Vic Schaefer to lobby for it after his team beat Iowa State in the Big 12 tournament. He brought up the net ranking, although who is it? Tom Izzo saying this net ranking is so blasphemous, we never need to pay attention to it again. But, you know, the Texas women had a net ranking of number three, and he brought that up. And Texas, you know, with the way that they finished, they get the number, they're the fourth number one seed, but hey, that's better than not being a number one seed. And I kind of like their draw. They're in the same bracket with Stanford, the number two seed in Texas's region. Texas played Stanford, I want to say, a couple of years ago in Vegas. Vic's second year. Anyway, Cameron Brink, the center for Stanford, who carved Texas up that day, she is still there. And Stanford has size and that kind of thing. But I hope that's the regional final that we get, Eric, because I like Texas to get to the regional final against Stanford. And then we'll see just how, you know, talented this Texas team is, because that Stanford team has Cameron Brink and their second leading scorer is the 6'3" forward. I don't think anyone can defend Madison Booker, but this can be a lot of fun to watch this this Texas women's team as a number one seed in the tournament.
Chip, I'm gonna lead with a story, so it's gonna cry me to ask a question. Did you happen to hear the Deanna Gaston, Shaylee Gonzalez exchange from the watch party? If you hadn't, it's no big deal. I'll quickly fill you in.
Yeah, fill me in.
Okay. There's a reason I'm going somewhere with this, folks. So right after the men's watch party was the women's. And, you know, Craig Way was there. It was a great environment, Chip. It really was great to have him there up there where we typically have football Monday pressers. But Craig Way was doing trivia in between commercials. Of course, you know, they're waiting on the seeds to be announced, right? And Craig Way asks, how many career games has Shaylee Gonzalez played in? And Deanna Gaston just jumped out and said, 5,000. And it was hilarious. I think everybody got a laugh. Chip, the reason I mentioned that is it's clear this team is loose, man. Like that to me, it matters heading into an environment like this. Loose, and you can tell how much this group of young women enjoy being around each other. You know, like that to me, I think are two things that this time of year kind of separate, you know, teams, because you know Texas is a good team. And listen, we've seen what they've been able to do without Rory Harmon, you know, got injured, and unfortunately, you know, in that early part of the year, I believe it was one or two games after the UConn game, if memory serves me correct. But just how they've come together, and Vic Schaefer talked about it, right? And you wrote about it using the Apollo 13 analogy, right? And this group really coming together and playing one another. So I just led with that story, Chip, because if you were there, I mean, metaphorically, but just getting a chance to feel the how much this group generally enjoys being around each other. Listen, you know, you got a talented group of teams that are out there, but in my mind, Chip, there's no reason not to think that Texas, even the way that they're constructed now, there's a reason they're a number one seed. And I think they're just as dangerous as anybody to make not only a deep run this tournament, but really contend for a national title.
Yeah. And Deanna Gaston is, you know, a super athletic 6 foot two forward who does a good job of defending players who are bigger than she is. She did probably the best job defending Ayoka Lee against Kansas State, the 6 foot six All-American, because she's really athletic and quick and can, you know, just make life difficult for bigger players. And, you know, Texas had shown in some tight late game situations, including the game at Oklahoma, where Texas was still fighting for a Big 12 regular season championship, that they can become really dependent on Madison Booker's ability to get her own shot. And in that Oklahoma game, Booker was missing. You know, she was one of 10 on her last 10 shots, and Texas ended up losing that game by a bucket. And we started to see it a little bit in the Kansas State game in the Big 12 tournament. K-State made a run. It's tied. I mean, Texas was up double digits. It's tied 61-61. And Madison Booker was missing some shots. And then all of a sudden, you know, Aaliyah Moore kicks it out to Shea Holly. Shea Holly hits the three-pointer with a minute 13 left. And then a great inbounds play from Vic Schaefer, where Shayla Gonzalez hits Holly on a backdoor cut for a layup when K-State wanted to foul. And that gave them a five-point cushion that they never surrendered. I bring up that story because someone else needed to step up in late game situations. And Shea Holly did it. And that's important because I think you've put so much on Madison Booker's shoulders. The rest of the team has to help out in those late game situations. And Vic Schaefer has to make sure that they're running plays for the right people. You know, Deanna Gaston is not afraid. She is going to put up, she's going to get to the bucket. She's not afraid to take a shot in the final minute. Neither is Shea Holly. Sometimes I think Shaylee Gonzalez loses her legs a little bit late in games with her shooting, but, you know, they've done a study, and the teams that tend to do the best in the NCAA tournament are the teams that have a trio of, you know, playmakers who can score at the end of games and come up with plays, difference-making plays. And for a while, you might, you know, kind of wonder, okay, who's the trio for the Texas women? You know, it's Madison Booker, but who else on a consistent basis? And I would put Deanna Gaston in there, and Shea Holly, just from a consistency standpoint, her scoring average is not, you know, it's not what Aaliyah Moore is and Taylor Jones and that kind of thing. But I think I see that trio with Booker, Gaston and Shea Holly. How about you?
No, listen, I agree with everything you say there. And you talk about it, right, with Shaylee Gonzalez possibly losing her legs a little bit as the game wears on. But I just think this team is so well-rounded. I mean, you actually talked about Shea Holly, and shout out to her. I mean, the last time she took the court, I mean, putting the clamps down on Emily Ryan, Iowa State guard, forcing her to 9 turnovers. I mean,
that's amazing.
That's the type of defensive effort that got her on the Big 12's all defensive team. So, no, I mean, just not much more to add there on my part, just that I completely agree with you. Just in something that, again, and I do think, and maybe this is just me, you know, Texas certainly in my mind has requisite size, you know, and Taylor Jones and Vic Schaefer talked about, and this was, gosh, probably, you know, 6 weeks ago, grinding down actually after the Kansas State game. So maybe a little bit less than that. Kansas State game, regular season, not in the tournament. You know, want to see a little bit more from Taylor Jones' consistency. And I think she's responded really well since then. So I just mentioned that, as I think as we're heading to the tournament now, size is a thing that I think Texas, you know, has more than enough of to compete with the teams that you know they're going to have to once you get to that Sweet 16, Elite Eight realm as well.
Yeah, and Amina Muhammad coming in off the bench at 6'4". Taylor Jones, 6'4". You know, Aaliyah Moore, 6'2". Deanna Gaston, 6'2". But Deanna is long, and she can defend players who are bigger than she is. So, Yeah. And, you know, even the little highlights we've seen of Jakalenga Mwenentanda, man, you just want to, I'm excited to see her growth because she's played in a hurry at times. And I get it. Her playing time has not been much. And so she probably does feel rushed when she gets in to try to make something happen. And sometimes that can take you out of your shooting comfort zone. So, but we did see her make some plays in the Big 12 tournament. And, you know, if Vic Schaefer and that team can dial it up at the right time and the shots are falling, watch out, because you're right. They have size. They have unbelievable guard play, thanks to Madison Booker, Shea Holly, and Shaylee Gonzalez. And then they seem to like each other. They seem to be ready to have fun and do their thing when they hit the floor. And that's not every team is like that. We'll get to that with the men and the possible matchup with in fact, why don't we just transition into the men? Cool.
Yep.
So Texas gets a 7 seed in the Midwest region. They're going to play in Charlotte, and they're going to open with the winner of this Colorado State Virginia game that will be played here in a couple hours. Full disclosure, my son goes to Colorado State, so we're kind of hoping it'll be a Texas-Colorado State matchup. And Eric, you know, there's some thought that Colorado State's a better matchup for Texas because they don't have anyone who really matches up well with Dylan Dazoo. Whereas Virginia does have, you know, a couple guys who might be a tougher matchup for Dylan Dazoo. And we know Dylan is, if we're looking for a trio for the Texas men, we know it's Max Asemus and Dylan Dazoo, and they're taking applications for the third member of that trio. We thought it might be Tyrese Hunter after that 30-point explosion against Oklahoma. And then he goes 0 of 7 from the field. Eric against K-State in the 78-74 loss.
Oh, man, Chip, a lot to dive into with the men. As you mentioned, the 7 seed, you talked about the Colorado State aspect. I think the Virginia aspect is interesting. And as someone who was there at the watch party.
Yeah, what was that? Caden Shedrick throwing his hands on his head for? I wanted him to stand up and like beat his chest and be like, come on.
So I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, I almost feel partly responsible because I ended the video there. And the context, if you look at it, it looks as if Caden is dismayed at it. And really, it getting to know Caden a little bit, he's a super humble kid. The context behind that reaction in my mind, Chip, was, oh man, like, of course I'm going against my old team, but not in a, I'm scared or backing down from them. Just, you could tell, Chip, I'd be willing to bet. I did not ask Caden this because we didn't talk in Claire's post game, but, and if I had extended that clip in 10, 15 seconds, you'd have seen him hopping on his phone. And I guarantee he's either responding to texts from his old teammates or texting his old teammates. Right. So I think it just was more so the awe and shock factor of, oh man, of all the teams, it's my old, you know, buddies. So that's really where that was. But sure, I can understand the perspective, like, all right, you know, and even Chip, again, if I'd extended that a few more seconds, you heard the entire team start chanting, Caden, Caden, right? So I'm sure, you know, once the shock and all wore off, you know, he's excited if it comes down to that to go up against his old guys. So, you know, I take a little bit of responsibility for that. Social media sometimes will take things and run with it. It looked as if Caden was, you know, dismayed or anything like that. And who knows the way the terms, because those Virginia fans were all in my mentions, just, you know, blowing that up. But nevertheless, you put that aside. I'm curious, you know, because listen, you talk about Tony Bennett and you know, everything starts with defense there. They want to slow the game down. But Virginia's had, Chip, some slip ups in the NCAA tournament. Teams that, you know, certainly were much better than this Virginia team, and they've gone out early at times. So I take a look at that. course, Tony Bennett, the former Charlotte Hornet, you know, didn't play in this building, Spectrum Center. He played in the old Hive back in the 90s, right? But certainly has ties to Charlotte. So that is another intriguing storyline as well. I'm torn, Chip, because I almost feel in one sense, for all the reasons you talked about with Colorado State, I look at Virginia as possibly being a good matchup as well. But listen, it's about applications for that third guy. In my mind, we know what Max Asemus can do in March. A kid who has scored 20 points nine times in his career and playing in March games, and certainly has had success, you know, when they being Oral Roberts, made a run to the Sweet 16s. So we know what he can do. We know what Dylan Dessou can do when he's staying out of foul trouble, but it's that third guy. I think that's going to make all the difference in the world for this team. So it'll be really interesting to see him get up to Charlotte. It's going to be a busy day come tomorrow. You know, I'll get in there around 10:45. The Texas has practice. I believe their availability for practice, memory searching practice, from 2 to 2:40. I think the head coach availability is about an hour prior to that. So we'll have a chance to talk with Rodney Terry and company and see what he has to say. But it's no different than anything we talked about all year, Chip. If this team can come out, play a consistent 40 minutes of basketball, and quite frankly, you know, I mean, put the defensive effort that we know that they have in, who's going to be that third guy? Chip, I don't mind. Chip, it doesn't even bother me if you see a game like you think you start to see, you know, like against Kansas State, or even, you know, you go back to the way they closed against Oklahoma. If it's a committee of guys, if it's Dylan Mitchell pouring an 8 to 10, Hayden Shedrick pouring an 8 to 10, Tyrese Hunter giving, you know, 12 to whoever, right? Like, that can get it done. It doesn't have to be Tyrese Hunter going for 30, but they have to get third scoring from somebody to supplement Dessou and Asemus.
And I don't like my man Kendall Weaver out of the starting lineup. I don't like it, Sam. I am. I do not like green eggs and ham. I'm on the record. My man Eric knows that I don't like messing with that defensive tone that he helped set from the beginning of a game. I'm a broken record on that. But I just say, go back to the Texas Tech game that changed it all for him, the game on the road. In Lubbock, Kendall Weaver had a special night that night. He's not afraid, and I didn't like it in the K-State game. He never got into a flow. I mean, yeah, IT Horton was hitting shots, hit 6 of 9, but he just stayed in, and Weaver never got into a flow in that game at all. And then when they needed defense down the stretch, Weaver wasn't on the floor. So it's
Chip, can I add one thing to that? And maybe this is something I should ask Rodney Terry tomorrow. You talked about Kendall Weaver not being on the floor defensively and not getting that flow. I wonder if Rodney Terry saw how tight the referees were calling that game and maybe realized that might not have been the best game for Kendall Weaver. Because if you know anything about him, he's going to be aggressive. He's going to get up on you. And we saw even, you know, that flagrant foul. I say that in air quotes. It's just a thought. I just
wonder. They called it tight. They called that game tight.
Yeah. So go ahead, Chip.
Well, I think, you know, what's interesting is if Texas gets the kind of performance that we know they're capable of, and God bless, Eric, they've been better on the road than they have at home. So maybe playing in Charlotte, they'll be reared up, ready to go. I mean, part of me thinks they will be. If they win, and if Tennessee wins, we get a round of 32 matchup between Rodney Terry and the man whose staff he served on for 11 years at Texas, Rick Barnes. So, of course, the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee put that together. You know, of course they did. And it was totally intentional. So, you know, Tennessee just got lit up in the conference tournament. I don't know what it was about the conference tournaments, for God's sake. I mean, Houston gets drilled by 20 against Iowa State, and but Tennessee gets run by Mississippi State. But I mean, Tennessee's really good, and Rick Barnes tends to, you know, his reputation is his teams will play tight in March. But something tells me if he sees that other orange, the burnt orange, the other UT, the burnt orange UT, with as much as he loves Rodney Terry, and he does, Texas totally mishandled his departure here, thanks to then, I don't even want to call him an athletic director because he was not that, Steve Patterson. So something tells me Barnes will have Tennessee raring and ready to go. But first things first, we will wait to see if it's the Colorado State Rams or the Virginia Cavaliers. And as Eric mentioned, Virginia, under Tony Bennett, first number one seed ever to lose to a 16 seed, six years ago against.
Was that UMBC?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep. So, all right, kids, we've, look, no time for baseball. Oh, well, they do play Baylor this weekend. It's big. They need to win. All right, time for some take it or leave it. Kids, don't go anywhere. We'll be right
worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
And if you're watching us on the Horns 24/7 YouTube channel, we will roll on with some take it or leave it. Everyone's favorite part of the show. Eric Henry, Chip Brown, telling you if they'll take it or they'll leave it. Eric?
And let's jump right in. You have more questions about the offense right now than the defense. Take it or leave it, Chip Brown.
Okay, I'm going to leave this. Even though there's 10 receivers vying for the jobs once filled by Xavier Worthy, A.D. Mitchell, and Jordan Whittington, I'm going to trust. And that new player-to-coach helmet communication, I'm going to trust Quinn Ewers and Steve Sarkisian to figure all that out. Plus, you have four of your five starters back in the offensive line, and the other starter, projected starter, started a game last year, Cam Williams. I have more questions on defense. You and I have talked about the defensive tackle, the depth of the rotation. Feel good about Alfred Collins, Vernon Broughton, even Tia Savea. Who's going to fill out the rest of that? Who's going to, you know, be the middle linebacker? Is it David Benda? Who was kind of at the front of the drills to start spring football? Is it going to be Leonga Lafau or Kendrick Blackshire? So, and then, you know, obviously it's safety. And what are we doing with Jahdae Barron? They feel really good about Jalen Gilbo at the star position. Jalen Gilbo even got mentioned in Steve Sarkisian's response about leadership. But got more questions on defense right now, Eric, so I'm leaving this. How about you?
Yeah, Chip, I'll just quickly piggyback off what you said. I am leaving it. More questions about the defense. You talk about defensive tackle spot. I mean, listen, it's not that we don't think they'll be up to par, right? But being up to par isn't necessarily the level that T'Vondre Sweat and Byron Murphy were last year, right? So there's that. Obviously, we got to see kind of what happens with the safety rotation, if it's a rotation, etc. So I'm leaving it, Chip.
All right. Eric, the Texas women reach the Final Four, and the Texas men don't get out of the first weekend of the NCAA tourney. Take it or leave it.
I'm leaving it, and it's half of that. I do think the Texas women reached the Final Four. So Texas men, call me a sucker, Chip, but I think that they'll rally for at least one game and end up facing Tennessee in the round of 32. So I'm leaving it, Chip. What about you?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to – well, let's see here. So – we're saying the men don't get out of the first weekend. Okay. So
I'll do that the first weekend. First weekend. Okay. Yeah. In that case, I'm taking it. I apologize. I misread the question.
Okay. I'm gonna take it as well. I do think the women, I like their draw to the regional final against Stanford. And I think they beat Stanford. So I think they go to the Final Four. The Texas men, I don't know what to expect. I don't know. I know Dylan DeZoo and Max A. Smith are going to do everything they can and usually come through. And then who else, you know, who else is going to step up? So I'm going to take this as well, Eric. Yeah, women reach Final Four. Men probably lose to Texas.
All right.
All right.
Final one. You're concerned about the weights of Sadir Mitchell at 372, Kendrick Blackshire at 261, and Savion Redd 240. Take or leave it, Chip.
You know, I'm going to take this just because of Sadir Mitchell. You know, Kendrick Blackshire, 15 pounds over where he played at Alabama. I get the feeling that guy can lose that weight, although I didn't see a lot of flab on him. Eric, I mean, he looks like, holy mackerel, that guy is thick. I want to see him play just because I think he's going to hurt somebody. But Sadir Mitchell, when those big guys get really big, it's hard for them to lose the weight. And look, Sadir Mitchell is an important piece of the puzzle for Texas. They need an over-the-nose player. That was Devondre Sweat. He's the guy who's going to make centers panic. And maybe Sadir Mitchell can do that at 372, but it's clear they don't want him that heavy. He was walking the perimeter of the field today. He's not participating in all the drills. Coaches were yelling at him. You know, that concerns me just because he's a big guy. So I'm going to take it, Eric. How about you?
I'm going to take it as well. Steve Sarkisian talked about the fact that, hey, you know, some of these weights, they're probably going to come down once you start running in the summer, DKR, middle of the afternoon. Guys are going to sweat off some of that weight a little bit. But I'll say this. Blackshire, not concerned because I saw the same things you saw. Savion Redd, we'll see. I mean, I guess it depends on what role he has, but 240 is still a number probably a little high, especially for Sark to mention it and say that, you know, hey, some of those weights you might want to see change. That's kind of what you know, kind of brought me there. But Sadir Mitchell, I guess, Chip, the thing is this. I mean, he finished last year, what, 336, I think? Or I shouldn't say where he finished. That's where he was listed. So we don't know where he finished. Listed. Right. So if you're gaining 30-something, almost 40 pounds, and it's January, it's March 19th, they finished playing February 1st. So you do the math, right? That's a little alarming to me. So we'll see what happens there. But yes, I would say I'm concerned specifically with the way to Sadir Mitchell.
Yeah. All right, kids. There you have it. Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of the Flagship Podcast. For Eric Henry, I am Chip Brown. Until next time, we'll see you over at horns247.com. Stay safe and keep the faith.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream.
Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.